Welcome to Part 2 of the Americans with Disabilities Act Requirements for Accessibility in Temporary Traffic Control Zones podcast. In Part 1, we talked about laws you should know about and comply with when developing accessible temporary traffic control areas. In this part, we'll discuss approaches for making temporary pedestrian facilities accessible, the Manual on Uniform Traffic Control Devices, or MUTCD, says that the needs of pedestrians, including those with disabilities, are a basic requirement of work zone traffic control. Pedestrians' needs must be addressed in temporary traffic control plans and be consistent with ADA requirements. Pedestrian treatments can be a subsection of the overall plan and should identify and address relevant factors and considerations unique to the work zone. When considering pedestrian accommodations, accessibility in temporary traffic control areas can be condensed down into three approaches. 1. Maintain existing pedestrian pathways if sidewalks can remain open during construction. Add any necessary warnings and modifications to maintain accessibility per MUTCD and ADAAG guidelines. 2. Develop an alternative pedestrian pathway that is parallel to or easily reached from the current pathway if the current pathway must be closed. 3. If the existing pedestrian path must be closed, identify and develop an alternative pedestrian pathway before implementing temporary traffic control measures that will detour pedestrians. For example, if the sidewalk is on the same side of the street as construction and must be closed, pedestrians can be rerouted across the street to a parallel sidewalk. When deciding on an approach, the first and most important consideration for all pedestrians is safety. Pedestrians must be kept in a safe environment, ideally on a smooth, well-marked path. Keep in mind that the concept of a safe, useful pedestrian pathway has evolved to incorporate many ADA elements, so addressing the needs of the disabled is an inherent element in well-planned and properly engineered pedestrian facilities. If it is determined that the current pedestrian facility can remain safely open during construction, the MUTCD clearly states that temporary facilities must include accessibility features that are the same as the existing pedestrian facility's features. For example, if the current facility features accessible curb ramps with detectable warning surfaces, then the temporary traffic control area must also provide accessible curb ramps with detectable warning surfaces. According to Section R205 of PROAG, which is reinforced by Part 6D.01 of the MUTCD, if pedestrian travel can be kept to the same side of the street it is already on, it will not increase the traffic exposure or accident risk. Keep in mind that, depending on traffic characteristics and the surrounding environment, a route that uses vehicle lane width for a pedestrian pathway may be shorter, safer, and more usable than one that requires crossing the street twice, even if the roadway surface is imperfect. Let's talk about some specific devices and practices that accommodate disabled pedestrians. PROAG outlines a number of physical guidelines and devices for creating temporary pedestrian routes. These guidelines can be broadly categorized under communication devices, surfaces, and detectable edging, temporary curb ramps and barriers, and channelizing devices. On-location communication, devices, signs, and guides.
Attention, westbound Main Street pedestrians. Sidewalk closed ahead for two blocks. Alternate path on opposite.
One of the most important factors to consider when planning a work zone is how to communicate with disabled pedestrians who approach and use the pedestrian pathways around work zones. They must be able to locate and use these pathways safely. The MUTCD notes that the most desirable way to provide guidance through temporary traffic control areas for people with visual disabilities is a speech message provided by an audible information device. Per the MUTCD, the best devices are those that provide speech messages in response to passive pedestrian actuation. However, devices that continuously emit a message or emit a message in response to using a push button are also acceptable. The MUTCD also advises that audible information might not be needed if detectable channelizing devices make an alternate route of travel evident to pedestrians with visual disabilities. It is possible for guidance and warning information to be transmitted via personal receivers, but keep in mind that these devices are not always carried by pedestrians with visual disabilities, so this method should not be wholly relied upon to convey important information. Warning signs about an upcoming temporary traffic control zone should be placed well ahead of the area to allow pedestrians to select an alternate route if needed. Signs should be positioned at the beginning of the block at an accessible crossing point well in advance of the construction site. Signs should include any special instructions that may be informative to a disabled person. These instructions can include, but are not limited to, the presence of ramps where the temporary traffic control area will end, whether alternative access routes to businesses or destinations are available, if buses are available to transport pedestrians around the area, and so on. Signs accommodating people with disabilities should be clear and concise, with large clear lettering, high contrast, and raised lettering or maps for those who rely on tactile capabilities for information. A guide can also be provided to assist any disabled or impaired persons in navigating the accessible pathway. This may be particularly appropriate in areas where higher concentrations of individuals with disabilities are known to be. During the planning phase, engineers should assess the general environment for pedestrian generators and other factors that may call for special access accommodations prior to designing a temporary traffic control plan. Surfaces. Let's talk about guidelines for surfaces. A continuous cane detectable surface must be provided within 1.5 inches of a finished grade. ADAAG advises that joints should be closed and flush to prevent tripping and to reduce the possibility of canes or small wheels getting trapped in gaps or spaces. PROAG states that the discontinuity in the surface must be less than a quarter inch. Discontinuities of a quarter to a half inch can be sloped, but discontinuities of greater than a half inch must be repaired. Pathways should be clear of debris and adequately drained to prevent accumulation of trash or mud that can cause tripping or slipping hazard. A minimum, continuous, clear width of 48 inches, free of obstructions, should also be maintained. Be advised that where the clear width of pedestrian access routes is less than 5 feet, passing spaces must be provided at intervals of a maximum of 200 feet. Passing spaces must be a minimum of 5 feet by 5 feet. Detectable edging. A continuous detectable edge allows cane users to detect the edges of the pedestrian pathway. According to the MUTCD, detectable edging should protrude at least 6 inches above the surface of the pathway, with the bottom of the edging being a maximum of 2.5 inches above the surface. Edging should be continuous throughout the length of the facility, except for gaps where pedestrians or vehicles will be turning or crossing. MUTCD advises that detectable pedestrian edging should be orange, white, or yellow, and should match the color of adjacent channelizing or traffic control devices. Edging should be firmly attached to the ground or other devices. Temporary curb ramps. When pedestrians are diverted to temporary routes in the roadway, temporary curb ramps should be provided to enable pedestrians to negotiate curbs safely. Temporary curb ramps should be the full width of the temporary route and are recommended to be 60 inches wide. The minimum width is 48 inches. Temporary curb ramps should generally lie in a single sloped plane with minimum surface warping and cross slope. All ramps should be firm, stable, and have a non-slip surface. They should not warp or buckle and should be made of materials strong enough to support the weight of pedestrians, as well as motorized scooters and wheelchairs. Ramps should also be color contrasting and have marked edges so they are noticeable by pedestrians with visual impairments. Ramps also need free draining surfaces with a maximum cross slope of 1 to 50 or 2%. When placing temporary curb ramps, avoid placing them near drain covers or grills that could impede pedestrians traveling in wheelchairs or motorized scooters. Also avoid placing ramps near drainage collection areas, because ponding or running water could be hazardous, especially for those who use canes or walkers. Transitions from ramps to walks, gutters, or streets should be flush and free of abrupt changes. Ramp slopes may be 1 to 8 for a maximum distance of 2 feet, with a maximum rise of 3 inches, and 1 to 12 for a maximum distance of 6 feet, with a maximum rise of 6 inches. Each ramp must have level landings at the bottom and top. A landing must be as wide as the run leading to it and have a minimum length of 60 inches. The landing can also provide added safety by adding hand railings and edge protection. Finally, when a ramp is installed parallel to the curb, a 48-inch by 48-inch platform should be provided at curb level to allow pedestrians to turn 90 degrees before descending the ramp. Barriers.
Whew, that was close.
Per MUTCD Section 6F.63, when exposed to vehicular traffic, channelizing devices should be able to provide positive protection to pedestrians. In other words, there should be crashworthy barriers between pedestrian pathways and traffic. Barriers may include concrete, steel, or water-filled devices, and should be used, for example, when diverting pedestrians onto the shoulder of a roadway temporarily if a sidewalk must be closed. The bottom and top surfaces of barriers must have retro-reflective material or delineation on the side exposed to traffic for improved nighttime visibility. On surfaces facing pedestrians, barriers should have a contrasting pattern in alternating light and dark colors to provide a visual contrast. This surface will consist of a minimum of 6 inches of sheeting or other contrasting materials. Non-retro-reflective materials may be used on the pedestrian-facing side of the barrier. When used properly, barriers should indicate a suitable path for pedestrians to travel around or through temporary traffic control areas. Channelizing devices. Pedestrian channelizing devices should be used to close sidewalks and delineate alternate routes where pedestrians are not exposed to vehicular traffic. These devices should be provided when work activities impact sidewalks or other pedestrian facilities, or when the temporary pedestrian facility design does not include accessibility features consistent with the existing pedestrian facility. When used properly, channelizing devices should indicate a suitable pedestrian path around or through temporary traffic control areas. The bottom and top surfaces of these devices should have retro-reflective material or delineation for improved nighttime visibility. They should also be detectable by pedestrians who use canes and visible to people with low vision. Devices should be stable and resist tipping or displacement if a cane or even a body pushes against them. They should be detectable by using residual vision by color, contrast, or brightness. And they should meet ADA provisions for protruding objects, which requires that no object should protrude more than 4 inches. When used to close sidewalks, channelizing devices should run the entire width of the sidewalk and have no gaps. Tape, barrels, or traffic cones should not be used to close a sidewalk because they leave gaps in coverage, which could lead to visually disabled persons accidentally crossing into the workspace where they may trip, fall, or be severely injured. Pedestrian channelizing devices should have a contrasting pattern of alternating light and dark colors to provide visual contrast on the upper surface. This surface should consist of a minimum of 6 inches of sheeting or other contrasting materials. Note that orange is seen by the disabled as a good color to use. It is the standard color for construction, provides good color contrast, and seldom results in glare. Do not use black to color any base on a device. Black can blend in with the pathway surface, which could cause a tripping hazard to those with diminished vision. Pedestrian channelizing devices need to be sturdy and stable. They should have continuous bottom and top surfaces. The top surface should be smooth to optimize hand trailing. Both upper and lower surfaces should share a common vertical plane. The lower edge of the bottom portion should be no higher than 2 inches above the walkway. The top edge of the bottom portion should be at least 8 inches above the walkway. The top of the device must be a minimum 32 inches above the walkway. Ballast for channelizing devices should be internal or mounted to the side of the device facing away from the pedestrian walkway. We've covered a lot of detail in this section, so if you want to review these measurements or print them out for future reference, please go to workzonesafety.org and download the script for this podcast. This site also hosts a downloadable version of the Practitioner Guide on Applying the Americans with Disabilities Act in Work Zones, which provides more detailed information and guidance on these and other accessibility considerations. All of these measurements and guidelines are available in the documents posted on the U.S. Access Board's Public Rights of Way webpage. A list of references can also be found on the webpage where this podcast is housed. This concludes Part 2 of this podcast. To listen to Part 3, please return to the Federal Highway Administration's grant page on the Work Zone Safety Information Clearinghouse at workzonesafety.org. This podcast has been a presentation of the Federal Highway Administration's Work Zone Safety Grant Program.